Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Megillah Daf Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin from the bottom, three lines from the bottom of Daf Beis Amud Beis. As we see the Gemara, right after the slash mark in the middle of the line, we will notice a double underline. This represents one of our series markings, which we began at the end of our previous shiur, and in our Mivneh heading in the outside margin, structural note. In our marked Gemaras, we attempt to provide structural notes. We label them as the Mivneh, as well as topic headings, which we label as Nosei, as each new sugya appears. In this case, the series began at the end of the last year with the use of the double underline to signify a series of memros of Rabbi Yirmiyah, Vitema, Rabbi Chia Bar Abba. This series, as you will notice, continues on to Daf Gimel Amud Aleph as well. The opening topic of today's shiur deals with the final letters of the Hebrew alphabet. There's an abbreviation that we use to refer to those letters, Manspach. Those are really all the final letters pronounced as a term, as a phrase. You'll notice under our Nosei heading in the outside margin, Manspach, which we call Oisios Hasofios, the final letters. They are Mem, Nun, Tzadi, Pei, and Chof. Tsoifim, which is a word for Hanavim, the prophets, Omrum. The prophets promulgated or made known the issue of the final letters. In the Hebrew alphabet, you have a basic 22 letters, and five of those 22 letters have what's known as final letters. They are shaped differently when you write them. The Gemara claims at the opening that the idea or the existence, the phenomenon of final letters is something that the prophets let be known. The problem with that statement, the Gemara will raise a question, is that things that are of a halachic nature, no one after Matan Torah has a right to mechadesh, to issue some type of new teaching or new law that didn't exist at the time of Matan Torah. And in introducing the issue of new letters on the part of the prophets would constitute a new teaching. The Gemara will deal with that issue. So now let's turn to the Gemara. The Omar Rabbi Yirmiyah V'itemo Reb Chia Bar Abba Manspach Tzofim Omrum. The translation of that would be the final letters of the Hebrew alphabet Tzofim are the prophets Omrum. They taught it. They informed it. They invented it. V'tizbara. The Gemara asks, and we have a new geometric form as far as this sugya is concerned. We call this the volcano shape, a trapezoid. You'll notice in the outside margin, the mivneh, the structural note, explains what the role of this form is. First of all, in parentheses, you see ma'akav. This is an attempt to keep track of a back and forth discussion. So with the narrow part facing upwards, this represents kushios, questions, and with the narrow part facing down, tshuvos, answers. So the Gemara asks, v'tizbara, there's a two-part question, and you can see we've indicated this with little numbers, one, and the next line, a two. Number one, v'hoksiv, eile ha-mitzvos. The pasuk in the Torah says, these are the mitzvos. And the fact that the Torah refers to it as, these are the mitzvos, that means that the Sefer Torah contains the mitzvos, and no one can come along and add to that. She'ein novi rashoi l'chadesh dovar me'ato. A prophet cannot come along and invent a new halacha. V'oid, and furthermore, even to suggest that the final letters were some type of later invention on the part of later prophets, V'homar Rav Chisda tells us that mem v'samach shebeluchos, the letter mem and the letter samach that are found in the Ten Commandments, benes hoyu omdim, their appearance in the tablets, in the stone tablets, were miraculous. Let us explain a word about that. First of all, in our discussion, we'll be focusing on the mem as opposed to the samach. The samach is not part of our immediate discussion in terms of the final letters, because the samach does not have a final letter. But the luchos, the tablets, were etched. The words were etched out, so to speak, but not a superficial etching, as one finds maybe in the cornerstones of buildings with the date recorded on them. But it was a type of chiseling away of the letters, whereby the chiseling went through and through. You could hold the luchos on either side, in other words, facing you, and then if you flip it around, you'll notice that the letter went straight through. So if the letters are chiseled away in a through and through fashion, imagine a letter that has the shape of a samach, or a final mem. These are letters that are completely surrounded. In other words, the samach, for example, is a circular type letter. The final mem is a square shaped letter. How does a letter like that maintain itself, bearing in mind that it's an etched out letter with an interior to it? The interior essentially is a cylinder. If the luchos are in fact etched out through and through, it would stand to reason that the internal part of the circular letter, the cylinder that is, would simply fall out. So the Rav Chisda tells us that those letters, the square-shaped final mem and the round-shaped samach, existed in a miraculous way. But what's important for us is to note that the mem, the square-shaped mem, in fact, is the final mem. The regular mem is not square-shaped. If you're holding a Maseches Megillah in front of you, you'll just take a look at the very top of the page and you'll see what a regular mem looks like in the word Megillah that's printed at the top. But, you know, and you'll notice that that is not completely surrounded by the letter. The interior of the regular mem, you'll notice there's a little part of it whereby the letter is not connected to the base. However, a final mem, the nature of the final mem, or the shape of the final mem, is basically a square, so that the entire interior of that, in order for it to be maintained, would have to be a miracle. What do we see from this? We see that in the Ten Commandments themselves, there was a final mem. So how can it be suggested that final letters were invented by later prophets? The Gemara responds, in mihavo havo, the final letters were always around, v'lo havu yadi hei be'emtza teva v'hei besof teva. But it wasn't clear which of the two letters, the we now call it a final mem because we place it at the end of the letter, but before the prophets came along, it wasn't known whether the square shaped mem was at the end of a word, or the what we call the regular mem was supposed to appear at the end of the word, of a given word. The Osu Tzoifim Vitiknu, and the Tzoifim, the prophets, came along and established Psuchin, the non-closed letters, are Be'emsa Teva. they are in the middle of the word. And ustumin, for example, the mem, which is sasum, it's sealed, meaning it means it's a letter that exists on all four sides. It's a square-shaped letter, so it's sasum. Besof teva, that is at the end of the word. So, let's say this over again. The prophets, as far as this restatement are concerned, the prophets are responsible for the positioning of the letter. But the Gemara asks, but in the final analysis, the issue of positioning of a letter in how to write a word is also a legal or halachic consideration. And that also falls under the category of Eile HaMitzvos that we saw before, She'ein Novi Osid L'chadesh Dover Me'ata, that a prophet cannot come along in the future and establish new halachas. So that if final letters were part of a tradition, but it wasn't established until later on where they are to be positioned in the word. So the original question comes back, that here you have the prophet inventing a new halacha. He's inventing the positioning of the letters in the words. Ela. So the Gemara explains that as far as the role of the prophets with regard to the final letters, it is as follows. Shochachum. Originally, at the time of the giving of the Torah, all of the details with regard to the letters was established. The final letters were at the end of the letter, at the end of the word, and the shapes were given. Everything was clear at the time of the giving of the Torah. However, as time went on, it became unclear. People forgot. The Chazru, the Yasdum, and later it was re-established. The later prophets simply, they had maintained the tradition and re-established where how everything is supposed to be done. But they didn't invent something new. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a new discussion. The Nosei topic heading that we see on the outside margin introduces the upcoming topic. Targum shel Torah, the Targum literally is the translation or the explanation of the Torah, the Aramaic explanation, Unklus Chibro. In many standard Chumashim you'll find, in addition to the Psukim of the Torah, you'll find what's known as Targum, the Targum. We call it Targum Unklus because Unklus was the one who established it. Targum shel Nevi'im, the Targum, the Aramaic explanation that accompanies the prophets, Yonusan ben Uziel Chibro. He is the one that compiled the Targum on Nevi'im. The Gemara begins here with a point, a long point. You can see with our markings the Nun that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical dashed line indicates that all of the lines of the Gemara that are opposite this vertical dashed line form the point. The Omar Rabbi Yirmiyo, Vitema Rabbi Chiyo Bar Abba, and you can see, of course, the double underline indicates that we're continuing with the series of these Rabbi Yirmiyo comments. Point 1, Targum Shel Torah, Unklus Hager Omroi Mipi, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua. Unklus, the convert, he is the one that said over or compiled the Targum that we have on the Torah, that he received as a tradition from Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, time-wise, one should realize, were the Rabbeim of Rabbi Akiva. So we're talking about a period of time that's very close to the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash. Targum shel Nevi'im Yonusan ben Uziel Omroi Mipi Zechagai Zechariah Malochi. The interpretation, or the translation, the explanation of the prophets was compiled by Yonusan ben Uziel, and as far as a time period is concerned with regard to him, the Gemara in Sukkah and Bava Basra points out that Yonusan ben Uziel was from the students of Hillel HaZaken. And Hillel, he was a Tana that was earlier than the Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua that we just saw a moment before. The Gemara reports that Hillel lived 100 years before the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash. So according to standard, let's say, world history dating systems, that would place Hillel approximately 30 before the Common Era. So that's the time that Yonasan ben Uziel lived. And it's this Gemara tells us that Yonasan ben Uziel had a tradition from Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. They were actual prophets that lived at the very beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash period. So he compiled, and recorded the Targum of the Nevi'im, and when he did that, Eretz Yisrael Arba Meos Parsa Arba Meos Parsa. This is an expression that's, we can offer a literal translation, but its meaning is probably something much deeper than the simple translation. The translation of this is that when he compiled his explanation, his Targum on the Nevi'im, Nizdazov means to shake. The land of Israel shook. It shook a distance of 400 parsa by 400 parsa. It's a measure of distance. For our purposes, we can say that the recording of the Targum Shel Nevi'im on the part of Yonasan ben Uziel was a dramatic event. Yotzeh Baskoil V'Omra, a heavenly voice came forth and said, Mi hu zeh shigilos sorai livnei adam? Who is it that revealed my secrets to mankind? Omad Yonasan ben Uziel Arago V'Omar. Yonasan arose on his feet and he said, Ani hu shigilisi sisorecho livnei adam. I am the one who revealed your secrets to man. It's known to you, he's addressing heaven, that I did not compile the Targum on the Nevi'im for my own glory, nor for my family's glory. I did it for your, for the glory of heaven. Shelo yarbu machlikes b'Yisrael, so as to reduce controversy in Israel. In other words, without an explanation to accompany the psukim, there are many psukim that are vague, very, very unclear, and as a result of that, people argue. So as to settle arguments, or preempt arguments from even arising, I compiled this explanation that of the psukim of the Nevi'im. V'oid b'kesh l'galois targum shel k'suvim. Yonasan ben Uziel even wanted to go far further and reveal the targum of the k'suvim, the third section of the Tanakh. We call the Holy Scriptures. The third section, the k'suvim, that contains svarim like the five Megillos and Sefer Eoiv and Sefer Doniel and Ezra. He wanted to reveal the Targum of that. Well, this far he didn't have a chance to go. Yotze Baskel V'yomra Loi Dayoch. The heavenly voice came forth and said, enough. Don't do it. My time off. Why not? Answer, Mishum De'is Be Ketz Moshiach. Because in the book of Doniel, there is a revelation of when the Moshiach is to arrive. And by revealing the explanation, as it is in the book of Doniel, it's vague, it's unclear, it's shrouded in mystery. In other words, there are psukim that do reveal this information, but they're shrouded in vagueness. And it's the will of heaven that it remain thusly, that the final date for the arrival of the Moshiach should not be something known to the masses. The Gemara raises a question. You can see that the upcoming question is rather long. It's indicated by the long question marking that you see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You see a kuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. The Gemara asks, "V'targum shel Torah unklus hager omroi, is it so that unklus compiled the targum v'ho amar Rav Iko bar Ovin amar Rav Chanani l'amar Rav? It's been said in the name of Rav. My dichtiv. There's a pasuk in Sefer Nehemiah that says, 'Va'yikru b'sefer Torah solikim v'forosh v'som sechel v'yovinu b'mikra.' And now the Gemara breaks the pasuk down, and you can see with our markings we've underlined the breakdown of the pasuk, and we'll be using a dashed underline to emphasize the main point for our discussion. The pasuk said, "Vayikru b'sefer Torah solekim ze mikra." That's a reference to the psukim themselves. Meforosh ze targum. Now, this is of great importance to us. So you have a pasuk in Nehemiah. Nehemiah lived at the time of the building of the second Beis Hamikdash. So the Targum is something that was in existence for a long time before Unklus Hager came onto the scene. V'som Sechel Elu Hapsukim. That's a reference to the Psukim. Rashi says, Hech Nifsakin. How you break it down. Where each Pasuk ends. V'yavinu B'mikra Elu Piskei Ta'omim. The Piskei Ta'omim, Rashi says, the Neginos Kruyin Ta'omim. The Neginos, the tune, some often referred to as the trup. That's what's referred to here in Vayivinu B'mikra. V'amri La, another opinion on what Vayivinu B'mikra is a reference to. Elu HaMasores. That's the way that words are spelt. In other words, there are many times that you'll find in Psukim words that with letters that, for example, are not pronounced, or words that are missing letters, so to speak, words that whose pronunciation contains letters that in the written form, in the scroll, the letter is missing. That's part of the Masores. For our purposes, though, we want to emphasize that the existence of the Targum predates Unklus by many, many years. So how do you explain that which Rav Yirmiyo said at the beginning of the sugya, that Targum shel Torah Unklus Hager Omroi? The Gemara answers, Shachachum v'chazru v'yosdum. Between the original appearance of the Targum and Unklus, there was a period that it had been forgotten. And Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua came along and reintroduced that which the masses had forgotten, and Unklus Hager recorded it. The Gemara asks, Maishna de'araisa de'lo izda'aza'a. What is different about the revelation of the Targum, the Aramaic explanation commentary that accompanies the Torah, that did not lead to any shaking of the land? You'll notice we have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. If you scan up, you'll find an arrow at which point you can see on that line that the arrow is pointing to this business of the nizdaza, the shaking of the land. So the Gemara is asking here, why in the case of the revelation of the Targum on the Torah, it wasn't viewed as a momentous or occasion that gave rise to the shaking of the land, whereas the Adinavi is Dazo, and with the revelation of the Pirush of the Targum on the Nevi'im, the land did shake. The Gemara answers, De'oraisa mifrisha milsa. The psukim of the Torah themselves are mifrisha milsa, are clear in and of themselves, are fairly clear and not shrouded in mystery. The Nevi'i, with regard to the psukim of the prophets, ika mili, de mifrishon, viko mili, de mistamon. Before we go further, we just want you to take note of the fact that we are beginning a long answer, as is illustrated in the long answer marking to the immediate right-hand side of the more text. You see a tuff that's encircled with a vertical dashed line, indicating that all of these lines are part of the answer. So the Gemara just mentioned that in the prophets there are psukim themselves that are vague, and hard to understand without the Targum Yonus and Benuziel. And because the Targum Yonus and Benuziel reveals that which was shrouded in mystery, this is called a momentous occasion concerning which the Gemara refers to it as Nizdaza, all Eretz Yisrael. The brackets that we see now, and their length is indicated by a bracket length indicator. You can see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, a vertical dashed dotted line. These brackets are not what we generally use brackets for, namely for skipping purposes, but rather the purpose of these brackets is to show that up till the brackets is the essential answer, the main answer. Namely, you asked a question about why the land shook for the Nevi'im and not for the revelation of the Targum on the Torah. So the answer is what was mentioned, that there are things that are mistimun, that are sealed or shrouded in secrecy. Within the brackets, the basis of that answer will be presented. In other words, we will see an example of psukim that in and of themselves are incoherent, and with the targum they become clear. So let's see this. Dichtiv. The pasuk in Zechariah says, "Bayomahu yigdal mispei Yerushalayim kemispei hadad rimon bebikas megidoin." We've dashed underlined the main expressions, and the markings here are to enable us to tie in what the Gemara will say later to this citation. The Omar of Yosef, Ilmole Targuma Dahai Kro, Rav Yosef says, if not for the Targum of this Pasuk, Lo Yodano Mai Komar, I would not know what it's talking about. The problem in the Pasuk is that on the surface of things, there is a reference to a hesped for Hadadrimon. Hadadrimon was the name of a king that killed Achav. It mentions here a misbade of Hadadrimon in the valley of Megiddon, but we don't see ever any time that Hadadrimon was in the valley of Megiddon. So the Targum, though, explains what is going on. But Yomahahu, on that day, now it's not clear which day is referred to, but if you look in the Gemara in Sukkah, the Gemara there darshins a Pasuk Yud Beis. In other words, we are seeing Zechariah, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Aleph. In Sukkah Daf Nun Beis, there's a drosha on Pasuk Yud Beis, right, the next Pasuk, that features the hesped, the eulogy, upon the death of the Moshiach ben Yosef, or upon the death of the evil inclination, the Yetzer Hara. So it's fair to assume that the reference here by Yomahu is a reference to that event. So if we want to talk about the hesped, the eulogy for the Moshiach ben Yosef, some future date this event will take place. So the Gemara says, by Yomahu, on that day, Yaske Mispido Yerushalayim, there will be a great eulogy in Yerushalayim. Kemispido de Achov ben Bar Omri de Kotel Yosei Hadadrimon ben Tavrimon Baramos Gilad. It will be the size of the eulogy, or I guess the masses that will assemble, will be like those that assembled for the eulogy of Achov, who was killed by Hadadrimon in a place called Ramos Gilad. Ukemispido de Yoshio ben Bar Omoin de Kotel Yosei Paro Chagiro Bebikas Megidoi. And like the hesped for the king, Yoshio, who was killed by Paro Chagira, the lame Paro Necho, and that killing took place in Bikas Megiddon. So in the original Pasuk, Hadadrimon is a reference to the Achov event, and Bikas Megiddon is a reference to the Yoshio HaMelech event. In other words, we're a reference to two different eulogies, and those are used as an example, it seems from here, of the size of the eulogy that will be sometime in the future upon the death of the Moshiach ben Yosef. Before we continue in the Gemara, we have a topic heading in the outside margin. Now, this is a new discussion, and you can see that by the fact that we have a slash mark here. The nosei, topic heading that you see in the outside margin, mar'e, a vision, sherak doniel ro'o, We'll be talking about a vision that's recorded in the book of Daniel that only Daniel witnessed or perceived, and the men that were with him, who we will see in the Gemara later, shortly, were Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi. They, even though they were prophets, and Daniel was not a prophet, they did not perceive this vision. Now we see the Gemara. V'ro'isi ani Daniel levadi es hamare v'hanoshim asher hoyu imi lo ro es hamare. I, Daniel, alone saw the vision. The men that were with me did not see it. Avol charadu gdolu nofla aleihem, but great fear overtook them. Vayivruchu behechovei, and they ran into hiding. Man nihu anoshim, who are the men referred to? Omar Reb Yirmiya, Vitema Reb Chiya Bar Abba, Ze Chagai Zechariah Malachi. Inhu Adifi Minei, the Ihu Adif Minayu. It's pointed out that Inhu, they are Adifi, greater than he, than Daniel, and he was greater than they. The Gemara explains this. Inu Adifi Mine, they were greater than he, to Inhu Nevi'i V'ihu Lav Navi. They were Nevi'im, they were prophets, and that's considered a high level individual. He was not a prophet. The idea of being a prophet is not something that's limited to one who receives a divine communication, but rather it's someone that receives a divine communication with the task of delivering it, promulgating it, of delivering it to the people. So Daniel, though he had divine revelations, he was never sent on a mission to reveal his communication to the masses. The Gemara continues, Ihu Odif Minayu, he is more exceptional than they are in the following, the Ihu Chozu V'inhu Lo Chozu. He saw it, they did not. We're referring, of course, to this vision. The Gemara asks, V'chineachad Lo Chozu, if they didn't see the vision, my time is Isu, so then why were they overcome with fear? The Gemara answers, Afagav the Inu lo chazu, even though they did not see it, Mazalayu chazu. Rashi says, Mazalayu, Sar shel kol odem lamala. Some type of spiritual force that's referred to as the minister of every individual that exists in heaven. So the mazal of the person does see it. Omer Avino, Shma Mino, from this we can conclude, Haiman Demivis, if a person experiences fear, Afagav the Ihu Lo Chozi, even though he himself doesn't see the source of the fear, Mazle Chozi, his Mazal does see it. Maitatate, what's the solution for an individual who is overcome with this we'll call it unfounded or seemingly baseless fear? What should a person do? Number one, Likri Kriyashma. He should recite the Kriyashma. V'i koyim b'mokom hatinoifes, if he is standing in a dirty place, and hence he cannot recite the Kriyashma. Linshof miduchte arba garmidi. Linshof, he should jump from his miduchte, from his position, from his spot, four garmidi, four amos. V'i loy, and if he's incapable of doing that, then lema hochi, he should say the following. This is an incantation, no need for us to offer a translation of it. Iza debe tabchi shmeina minoi. V'hashto de amris, the Gemara at this point goes back to the psukim in that we made reference to earlier in the Megillah. And actually, before we go on in the Gemara, let's take advantage of our Nosei heading, the topic heading. Several points will be raised in the Gemara. Mevatlin avoido v'talmud Torah lishmo mikra Megillah. That if a person's involved in the Beis HaMikdash, and of course we're talking about the second temple period, if someone were involved, the Kohen were involved with offering sacrifices, and were tending to sacrifices, and the time for Megillah reading arrived, or a person is involved with learning Torah, and the time for Megillah reading arrived, So he is to stop the avodas hakorbanos, the sacrifice activity, stop his Torah learning to go to hear the reading of the Megillah. Another point that will be featured, Talmud Gadol o Avoda Gadola, Ma Nechshav Yoiser. If one has to compare Torah learning versus sacrifice, offering of sacrifices, which is considered greater? And another thing we will deal with in the upcoming Gemara, Mifgash Yoshua im Malach Hashem b'Matzor al Yericho, a meeting of Yoshua with a angel of God while they were laying siege on Yericho during their conquest of the land of Israel. Turning back to the Gemara. V'hashtu the Amris, Medina u'Medina v'ir v'ir l'drasha. Now that we've established that this Pasuk in Perek Tes Pasuk of Ches of Megillas Esther has in it halachas to be derived, Mishpacho, Mishpacho l'may also. So what is the purpose of the words Mishpacho, Mishpacho that appear in that Pasuk? You'll notice that we have a little arrow, a squiggle arrow, to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara with a Beis Amid Beis indicator. That means that if you look back to Beis Amid Beis and you'll scan down the right-hand side of the page, you'll notice in the wide lines, more than halfway down, a little squiggly arrow with a Gimel Amid Aleph indicator under it. Hence, tying together where this line, or where this quote is coming from. So the Gemara is asking, that particular pasuk, which we had recorded at the on the inside margin of the of Beis Amid Beis, you can see it over there. The term Mishpacha Mishpacha is there. What does it come to teach us? Amar Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanino Lahavi. It comes to include Mishpachas Kuna Levia, the Kohen and Levi families of Israel. Shemivatlan Avodoson, the Kohanim Leviim ordinarily were involved with Beis Hamikdash activity. Nevertheless, they are to stop, to halt their Beis Hamikdash activity, Uboyin Lishmo Mikra Megillah, in favor of hearing, to coming to hear the Megillah reading. The Omar of Yudah Marav, Kohanim Avodosom, Uleviim Beduchonam, the Yisrael Be'mahmodon, Kulon Mevatlan Avodoson, Uboyin Lishmo Mikra Megillah. What was just mentioned, the Kohanim, Leviim, and Israel, each group had their own role and function in the sacrificial activity. So that the Kohanim, who were the actual processors of the Korban, the Leviim, who would participate in the on the Duchan as a reference to the platform in which they sung and played instruments, and the Israel, who sent representatives, the rest of Klal Yisrael had representatives on a regular basis to be present while the Korbanos Tzibur were offered. All of them, that's called the Ma'amodos, anyway, all of those are to mevatel, to stop their activity in order to hear the Megillah reading. Tanya Nami Hachiweva, Tanaic source that supports this. You will see in this Tanaic source, you could see that it's a Tanaic source by virtue of the frame that we provide in our Gemara marking system to set apart Tanaic sources from the rest of the Gemara. So in this source, it says what we just heard in the name of Rav. Kayanim, Bavodosan, Levim, Beduchonim, Yisrael, Bamodon, Kulim, Vatlam, Bavodosan, Voyin, Lishmoa, Mikra, Megillah. Mikan samchu shel Beis Rebbe shemevatlan Talmud Torah uboyin lishmoa mikra Megillah. Based on the idea that we stop Beis Hamikdash sacrificial activity for Megillah reading, in the house of Rebbe, who lived after the Beis Hamikdash was already destroyed, derived that you stop your Torah learning in order to hear Mikra Megillah. Kal v'chomer me'avoda, and they used kal v'chomer logic based from avoda, from the fact that you're mevatel for your mevatel avoda, avoda's Beis Hamikdash, sacrificial activity for Megillah, and used the kal v'chomer to determine the law regarding stopping Torah learning. Uma avoda shichamura mevatlinon. Mind you, avoda, that means the sacrificial activity in the Beis Hamikdash, avodas hakorbanos, which is very severe, very important, it's chamura, very important, very significant. and that we stop in favor of the Megillah, Talmud Torah, Lo Kol Shekein, Torah learning, which on the surface appears to be of less significance than Avodas Beis Hamikdash, certainly we would stop Talmud Torah for the purpose of the Mikra Megillah. Well, this last point gives rise to a heated discussion in the Gemara. The discussion being, is it really so that Avoda is more chomor than Talmud Torah? Structurally, we want to note that we have a long question, and that's indicated by the long question marking. You can see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, you see a kuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. This vertical dashed line continues to the till the third line from the top of Amud Beis. The Gemara will challenge this idea that Avoda is more chomor than Talmud Torah based on a story involving Yehoshua, who, while encamped around Yericho, laying siege on Yericho, a malach appears and comes with heavy criticism on Yehoshua, and he's criticized for two things. He's criticized for causing we should mention that this malach appears at night to Yehoshua while he's laying siege on Yericho. The malach comes with two points of criticism. One is that on the previous day he caused the daily afternoon sacrifice, the Tumat Shabbat Abayim, to be skipped. In other words, it was he was mevatel, he voided it. They didn't offer it. And not only that, but this very evening, this very nighttime, he's causing them to mevatel from their Torah learning. So there are two points of criticism. One is sacrifice related, and the other is Torah learning related. Yeshua hears these two points of criticism. He asks, "Well, which is your main point of criticism? What are you really coming for? What's the bigger of the two problems?" And the Malach will reveal to him that the bigger of the two problems is the fact that you're causing the people to be bought mevatel Torah. In other words, you're causing them to be preoccupied with other things that they don't have to be doing when they could be learning Torah right now. Well, we see from the Malach's response that if his main motivation for coming is the Torah issue, it must be that the fact that the Torah issue is greater than the fact that they were also responsible, that Yeshua was also responsible for the non-offering of the afternoon sacrifice. Showing you that the learning issue, the Bittul Torah issue, is greater than sacrificial activity. If that be the case, then we have a question on what was just taught in the source. So we start the question, we'll shortly encounter a bracketed section, we'll say a word about that. First, the Gemara. The Gemara begins the question, "V'avoda chamura mitalmud Torah." Is it really so that avodas korbanos is more important, more significant than Torah learning? The Hoksiv, but the pasuk says, "Vayhi b'yos Yeshua b'Yericho, v'yisa enov v'yar." While Yeshua was encamped around Yericho, he raised his eyes and he saw v'nei ish oimed lenegdoi v'yishtachu. And he bowed down to this individual. The story involving Yeshua continues right after the bracketed section, where it says, second line from the bottom, you can see, Omar Lo, the Malach, says to him, well, this individual that appeared to him at night that Yeshua bowed to turned out to be a Malach. And the Malach says, well, Emesh bitaltim Talmud Shel Ben Arbayim, V'achsho bitaltim Talmud Torah. Hey, what's going on with you? Yesterday you stopped them from offering, you didn't enable them to offer the afternoon daily sacrifice. And now at night you're being mevatel them from their Torah learning. We'll go over this point shortly. Let's go over the bracketed section. The Pasuk had just mentioned that at it was nighttime, this man appeared, this image appeared, and Yoshua bowed down to this image. Vehefi Ovid Hochi, how could he bow down to an image? It's nighttime. We weren't dealing here with flashlights or campfires. How could he bow down to the unknown? V'homa Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Osir l'odom shitein sholom l'chaveru b'layla, chayshin shemo sheidu. It's osir even to greet a person using the word shalom. Shalom is a name of the Almighty. So it's osir to say, to greet someone, saying shalom at night, on the suspicion or the fear that you may be dealing with a shade, a demon. The Gemara says, as far as Yehoshua's behavior here in bowing to what was the seemingly unknown and not suspecting that it was a demon, shiny hasam, the case involving Yehoshua is different. The Omar lay, because the image, the form, said, Ki ani sar tzavo Hashem. I am a minister in the army of the Almighty. The Gemara asked, well, Vadilma Meshakri, so what? He said it. Maybe he's lying. Maybe it's really a demon. The Gemara answers, Gemiri, we have a tradition, Dolo Mafki Shem Shemayim Levatola. The demons do not use the name Hashem in vain. So that if it were a demon, so he wouldn't say that he's a minister in the army of God. Therefore, it had to have been, it was a non-demon, and it was, you have to take the statement at face value, that we're dealing with a malach. And hence, upon hearing that, Yehoshua bowed. Now, we go back to what did the malach want. Omar lo, emesh bitaltem tomid shel ben arbayim. Yesterday, you didn't allow the sacrifice, the afternoon daily public sacrifice to be offered. The achshav, and now at this night time, bitaltem talmud Torah, you are stopping the mass, the people, from their Torah learning. The Rashi adds here, the achshav shulaylo, now it's nighttime. Hoya lochem laasuk b'Torah. Shari einchem milchamim b'layla. You should be learning now. You're not battling right now. Omar lo. Yehoshua says to the Malach, Al eze mehen bosa. On which one of these two complaints are you really coming? Omar lo. The Malach says, Ata bosi. I'm coming on the problem of right now. The problem of right now is the Torah learning. Miyad, well, upon hearing that, immediately, Vayolen Yehoshua Balailo Ahu Besoicho Emek. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Melamed Shelon Ba'oinka Shalach. This teaches us that he spent the night in the depths of Torah learning. The Omar Rav Shmuel Bar Unya, Godol Talmud Torah, Yosir Me'akrovas Tamidim. And here the point of the Gemara really comes to a head, where it says that greater is Torah learning more than the offering of the daily sacrifices. Shinemar Atabosi, because we see in this incident the Malach is coming for the current problem, which was a Torah learning issue, even though there had also been the problem of the Korban. But the problem of the Korban was not of sufficient import to motivate the Malach to come, but the non-Torah learning was. So we see that Godol Talmud Torah Yoyser Me'akrovas Korbanos, to meet him. By the way, let us compare this statement. Notice that we have this dashed underline. We also have a little star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara that indicates Omid Aleph. Compare what you see here to the same notation on Omid Aleph. Notice, try to find the star on the right-hand side of the Gemara text on Omid Aleph, and you'll notice a dashed underline, and let's see what it says over there. And lo and behold, you'll notice the lower part of the page, a similar dashed underlining, where it says, Uma avoido shihi chamura. There it describes avoda as being more important, more severe, more serious than Talmud Torah. And here you see Talmud Torah being more than the Korbanos. The Gemara at this point, therefore, comes to the end of the long question. Answer, lo kashya. Ha de rabim v'ha de yachid. If it's a public learning issue, then Talmud is gadol. Learning is more significant. If it's an issue of private learning, then avoda and Purim are greater than private Torah learning. Before we go further, let's just take note of what we're about to do involves a long question. And you can see the long question marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara with a kuf that's encircled and a vertical dashed line indicating all of these lines will form the question. According to the point we just made was that ha diyachid, that when it comes to private Torah learning, so avoda and Purim are more significant. That would mean that in such a case, it's clear that one would have to close his Torah learning books and go off to hear the Megillah reading. Likewise, offering of sacrifices is greater than private Torah learning. Now the Gemara asks, is that really so that individual Torah is considered less than Purim? Udiyachid kal, and the private Torah is considered less than Purim. We have the following Tanaic source. This source has a lot of information in it concerning issues of burials and eulogies and activities that accompanies those sad events with regard to holiday periods. The source itself contains information, but for our purposes, the main point of the question will be that which appears after the source. If you skip down a bit, you'll see the end of the line, the word Upurim is dashed, underlined. At that point, the question will come to a head. So let's turn to the Gemara itself. It asks a question from the following Tanaic source. V'hotnan, we have the following teaching. Noshim b'moyed. If it's a moed, is a holiday or cholamoed period, and a burial is taking place. So noshim b'moed ma'anois avoloi lo metapkois. Ma'anos is a hesped, they will eulogize, but they won't metapkos. This was an action of beating their hands on their chest as a sign of woefulness. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, im hoyu smuchos lamita, if you're dealing with people that were close to the deceased, the mita is the bed or the stretcher on which the deceased is placed, so if one is next to that, then metapchos. Biroshe chadashim b'chanagu purim, these are holiday periods, or we can classify them as semi-holiday periods, of less festive nature than moyed, therefore more allowance is made for funeral rituals. So it says regarding these times, me'anois u'metapchois. In addition to the eulogizing, they are also entitled to do this hand beating. Baze u'baze einon mekoninois. But with regard to the issue of mekoninos, which is a situation where a kino is one person recites something and everyone, and then there's a response. It's a type of responsive dirge. So, as far as mekoninos is concerned, which is probably a more mournful rite, that's not done on any of these days. V'yomar Rabo Bar Huna, Ein Moyed Bifnei Talmud Chacham. When it comes to the passing, the death of a Torah scholar, then all of these restrictions do not apply. Kol Shekein Chanukah Purim. All the more so when it comes to the death of a Talmud Chacham and the burial rites and rituals, certainly will take place all the more so In other words, if we're allowing it during the Moed, and all the more so will we allow it with regard to Purim. The point of the question is that we see the emphasis placed on an individual scholar, which we're associating at this point in our Gemara with Talmud Torah de Yachid, having overruling the festive nature of Purim, giving us the impression that the Talmud de Yachid, Talmud Torah de Yachid, is greater than Purim matters. The Gemara answers, deflects the question, responds, and it says, Chavoid Torah Koamris? Are you trying to bring to introduce a question based on the issue of honor that's bestowed to Torah? Chavod Torah de Yachid Chamur. The honor that one is supposed to give to Torah, even if it's you're talking about an individual, the honor one must pay to an individual Torah scholar, that's very serious. Talmud Torah, the study of Torah diyochid on the part of an individual, kal, that is less than Purim. And as a result of that, if one is conducting his private learning, he stops that in order to go off and hear the Megillah. Let us glance at the outside margin. Reva Nosei, Mivneh heading, topic heading combined with the structural note. In this upcoming Gemara, we will notice the use of diamonds. These diamonds are Shlavim. They represent stages B'divrei Reva. Reva begins with an expression of Pshitali. A certain point or points are obvious. Boi. It will then raise a question. And the third stage, Hodar Pashti, then answers the question he raised. We see in our markings the use of a double underline, which is one of our series indicators. And we explain it, Sidre Adifuyos. We'll have a series of Adifuyos indicates is something having significance over something else. Priorities, if you will. The first four that you see listed here are all classified together as pshita. These are obvious. These have sources for what we're about to say. The fifth, number five, you can see a five in parentheses, that will be the subject of our question. So before we do the Gemara itself, looking at our Sidre di Fuyos, Avoda versus Megillah, we know that Megillah is greater. Talmud Torah versus Megillah, we know Megillah is greater. Talmud Torah versus Meis Mitzvah, that means that someone may be learning and he notices there is a corpse that's unattended, that needs to be buried, and there's no one else that's going to bury it. So if there's an issue of Torah learning versus tending to the corpse, that's called Meis Mitzvah, that overruled. Meis Mitzvah pushes off Torah learning. Avodah and Meis Mitzvah, there too we will discover that Meis Mitzvah overrules or pushes off the sacrificial activities. So in this list of things, we see that Megillah is stronger than Avodah and Talmud Torah, and we see Meis Mitzvah is stronger than Talmud Torah and Avodah. The question that will arise is you take these two strong elements and pit them off one against the other, and you'll come out with Megillah versus Meis Mitzvah, which overrides. Now, the Gemara. Omar Rava, Pshitali, the following is Pshitali, and you'll notice we have a long marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, indicating that all of these lines form the Pshitali, that which is obvious to Rava. Number one, Avodah Mikra Megillah, if there's a choice of sacrificial activity or going to hear the Megillah, Mikra Megillah Adif. Mikra Megillah overrules, Mida Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanina. Here the Gemara is being very brief. It's simply a reference to what we saw on Omid Aleph, and in order to find that, take advantage of the double star that we have here on the right to the right-hand side of our text. If you look back on Omid Aleph, to the right-hand side of the Gemara text, try to find where you notice a double star, and you'll notice on that line, which is in the lower part of the page, in fact, that's where Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina brings his source for this idea that you're mevatel avoda for Mikra Megillah. Point two, we continue in our Gemara, Talmud Torah u'Mikra Megillah. Mikra, Megillah, other. If this too is Pshita to Rava, that if it's a question of Torah learning versus hearing the Megillah, Mikra, Megillah is overrules Mita Samcho Shel Beis Rebbe, because of that which Beis Rebbe relied upon, which was also featured on Amud Aleph, in order to find where that is coming from, take advantage of one of our other markings. Notice the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. There's a encircled star with an Amud Aleph indicator. If you find where that is on Amud Aleph, you will notice where this is coming from. Number three, Talmud Torah Meis Mitzvah. Meis Mitzvah Odif, Midasanya. From the following Tanaic source, we will discover that it's more important to bury uncared for corpse more than Torah learning. Mevatlin Talmud Torah lo soas meis ulachnosas kala. This source tells us that we stop Torah learning for the sake of accompanying a body to its burial and to accompany a bride on the way to her wedding. The Tosfos points out that when we speak about Talmud Torah versus Meis Mitzvah, and we say that Meis Mitzvah Odif, the Tosfos says, Lav Dafka Meis Mitzvah, V'hu Adin L'chol Meisim Sheba Olam V'al Talmud Torah L'Otziyom. That for the mitzvah of accompanying a mace that's not a mace mitzvah, because he has people that are caring for the corpse. People are caring for it. Nevertheless, I'm to stop my Torah learning if you have a situation where a funeral procession is going by where you are learning. So you stop your learning and accompany the funeral procession. Continuing in the Gemara. Avoda u'meis mitzvah, meis mitzvah adif. If it's a question of offering korbanos or tending to the uncared for body, you are to deal with the body. Meis mitzvah adif, mi vile achoisai. That's based on the presence of an extra word, a seemingly extra word, that is, in the parsha featuring the nazir. The nazir is someone that has a high level of holiness, and thereby he is not to expose himself to Tumas Meis, even if it concerns one of his very close relatives. And yet, the Nazir, with all of these restrictions, when it comes to a Meis Mitzvah, you will see that he violates his Nazir status for the sake of dealing with the Meis Mitzvah. The Sanya. Here you have a source that will reveal that point. Ulachoso ma talmud lomar. Why does the Torah teach me that the Nazir is not allowed to metamet to his sister? We already know he's not allowed to metamet to any of his relatives. Hare shehoya holech lishchoyes pisul lomas beno. Behold, you have someone on his way to do a korban pesach and to circumcise his son. A person whose son is not circumcised cannot do the Korban Pesach. V'shama shemeis lo meis. And he hears that one of his close relatives died. Yochol yitamei. Is he allowed to expose himself to tuma, to take care of this relative? Amris lo yitama. The nazir is not allowed to metam himself. Yochol kishem shenu metame lachoysukach inu metame meis mitzvah. Could it be that just like he cannot metame himself to participate in his sister's funeral, he is not allowed to metame himself to the unaccounted for, uncared for corpse? Talmud lomar lachoso. The Torah specifies achoso to tell me the following. Lachoso hu deina metame. The restriction is to achoso. Someone else will take care of her burial. Avo metame lameis mitzvah. But with regard to a corpse that no one is caring for, this nazir, even if he's on his way to do the Korban Pesach, He is to care for the Meis Mitzvah. So we see from here that Meis Mitzvah pushes off even Avodah, even matters of sacrifices. All of these points, we saw four of them, were Pshita, were obvious to Rava. Obvious because each point had a source, had a basis. Boy, Rava, what about this? Mikra Megillo Meis Mitzvah Hei Minayu Odif. Which of these two is takes precedence? And the Gemara will present the two sides. You can see with our markings, we indicate this with an Aleph and a squiggle line expression, O Duma, and then Beis, O Duma, or maybe Beis. In our markings, we like to use the squiggle underline when it comes to the switch point between two or more possibilities of whatever. Two sides of a question, multiple answers, two different versions, two lishonos, etc. So here, the first side of the dilemma is Mikra Megillah Adif Mishim Prisumeni. So maybe the need to participate in the hearing of the Megillah takes precedence over the tending to the Meis Mitzvah, because when participating in the Mikra Megillah, you're accomplishing Pirsum Hanes, the publicizing of the miracle. Oy Dilma Meis Mitzvah Adif Mishim Kvod Habrios. Or maybe tending to the unaccounted for, uncared for corpse takes precedence, because otherwise there's a violation of the dignity of man. A body lying unattended is a violation of human dignity. Posto, you can see the diamond. This represents the third stage of Rava's discussion. After he raised the question, he then resolved Meis Mitzvah Odif. Caring for the corpse takes precedence over the hearing of the Megillah. The Omar, it has been taught, Godol Kovod Abrios Shedecha Es Loisase Shebetora. Greater is the preservation of human dignity, even if it's not in the context of a body per se, but even different cases involving human dignity. It's so significant that one is allowed to violate a negative command in the Torah. The negative command referred to over here is a reference to the mitzvah involving returning lost articles. Let us say, for example, that there's a large animal, a cow, that's wandering the streets, and a dignified individual, a Talmud Chacham, a sage, is passing by, and he sees this cow wandering around. For him to grab the cow by its collar or leash and walk the streets with it in attempt to return the cow to its owner, that would be a violation of his dignity. As a result of that, the Gemara is telling us that the preservation of his dignity enables him to violate what otherwise for a commoner would be the negative command of lo suchal lehisaleim. You are not allowed to avoid the return of a lost item. You must engage in the return. Lo suchal lehisaleim. You cannot hide yourself. You cannot avoid it. But when it comes to a Talmud Chacham, a dignified individual, he is allowed to violate this and preserve his dignity. As you can see, we have a slash mark in the Gemara, indicating that which follows is a new idea. It's new, however, we will be referring to a point mentioned much earlier, but new in the sense that this is no longer related to the issue of Kovod HaBrios. On the outside margin, we have a mivneh, a structural note, indicating that this structure continues till Dalet Amud Aleph. We will see the use of a house marking and some numbering as well. So, in paying attention first to the Roman numeral 1 and 2, this is here to show me Beis Kvutzos, two groups, Shalmeimros, of comments to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. In other words, we're going to see numerous comments of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, but they break down into two groups. One group is Be'inyan Krach, regarding cities, large cities, and of course in the context in the context primarily of Megillah, but other topics will be alluded to as well. And the second group of Meimros is Be'inyan Megillah Upurim. So even though Krach also is related to Purim, it has other ramifications that are non-Purim related. Hence we're calling it a separate category. We have a nosei with a one in a little house form, indicating that the first statement of Rabbi Shimon Levi in the first sub-statement, if you will, the first statement in group one involves kol hasomuch lo lekrach v'chol anira imo nidon kekrach. Those communities that are next to or seen from the krach are considered like the krach. That this particular halacha is Megillah related. Turning now to the Gemara, Gufa Amar Rabbi Yishuv and Levi, krach v'chol hasomuch lo v'chol anira imo nidon kekrach. Might want to point out in addition that since we categorized Roman numeral number one as a group of halachas of Rav Shum and Levi regarding krach, we've attempted to use a dashed underline every time the word krach or a reference to krach appears at the beginning of his statements or in the context of his statements. So you can see the number one, house number one, and you'll notice the word krach dashed underline, and when you skim down a few lines, house number two, you see Rabbi Yishuv and Levi's name in a house, and you see the word krach with the dashed underline, and the same thing with regard to three, and with regard to four, and five, which starts at the bottom line, but at the top of Dalet Amar Aleph, you'll see the expression mukafos choma, which is the tie-in to this particular series. So we continue now with the first, with the house number one. He had mentioned 2 points, that with regard to the krach, anything that's somuchlo and nira imo is considered having the law of the krach. And that would mean that these places would read the Megillah on the 15th of Adar, if you're talking, of course, about a krach that's mukav chomim imos Yeshua ben Nun. Tana, the Tanaic source, features 2 points. Aleph, Somuch afalpi she'eno nira, beis nira afalpi she'eno somuch. If it's near, even though it's not seen, if it's seen, even if it's at a distance, it's not near. So bishlama nira afalpi she'eno somuch. By the way, in our previous daf on daf beis, we defined somuch as within a meal, we'll say approximately a kilometer. This is something that's not within the meal, it just is visible from. In other words, if you're at a particular location and you can see the krach, you will have the law of the krach. So mishkachas law, you can have a situation of nire afal pishenu samuch mishkachas law, you can find such a case kagon diyasva b'roi shahar. The community that we're talking about is at the top of a mountain, and from the mountain top, if you look into the distance, you will see the krach. Therefore, the community at the top of the mountain would read the Megillah on the 15th. Elo, somuch afal pishenu nira, hechi mishkachas lo. How do you have a situation of something that's nearby, and yet you cannot see the krach from a nearby location? You can have a situation like that where the krach is at the at a high location, and there's a sudden drop into a ravine or a valley, and the distance from the community located in the valley to the krach is less than a kilometer. However, since the drop is a very steep, a sheer type of drop, the low community cannot see one another. The Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Krach Shiyosha Ulebesof Hukach. A city that was first settled with houses, and after the houses were established, were built, then it was decided they would wall them in. They would build a wall around houses. that is nidon kekfar. It's judged legally as a non-walled city. This has ramifications with regard to something called Bote Orei Choma. This is a parsha in the Torah, in Sefer Vayikra, where if you have a house in a Orei Choma, in a walled city, and it's called a walled city, legally walled city, not that it's physically walled, because that's exactly what we're talking about, but if it's considered a legally walled city, or classified as an Orei Choma, then there are halachas that apply to sales of houses in such places. For example, if a house in a Bote Orei Choma is sold, the owner has a right to insist on his buying it back, provided he insists on it within, or he makes the deal within a year of the sale. However, if a year goes by, he can no longer force its resale to him. There are other halachas that apply to Orei Choma, including halachas concerning Shiluach Mitzrayim, the sending out of Mitzrayim from within those kind of cities. Anyway, the point that Rav Shulman Levi is making, that if you have a situation where first houses were built and then a wall was built around it, that's not called a walled city. My time all to receive the why is it the pasuk said this is it the reason the pasuk says v'ish ki imkor bias moshav ir choma, the house was a house in a place that there had been a wall at the outset, shehukaf u'lebesof yoshav v'lo shiyoshav sof hukaf, namely hukaf, a wall was built, and then after a wall was built, houses were built within its perimeters, and not a case where houses were first built and then around the houses was built a wall. The Amar Rabbi Shimon and Levi, Krach She'ein Bo Asur Batlonim. It's pointed out that we're talking about a city as a regular city, and not Dafka, Lav Dafka, something that's walled from the time of Yeshua ben Nun. So the Rav Shimon Levi tells us that a city, She'ein Boi Asora Batlonin, Nidon Kikfar, a city that doesn't have 10 Batlonim. The term Asora Batlonim is defined by Rashi. He says, Shebetelim Mimlach, and these are people that are not employed, or they're deliberately unemployed, Shiyu Mitzuyin Tomid Bebeis HaKnes HaShachs V'Arvis, so that these people are always available in the morning and the evening to be in the shul. Can remember Maseches Brochas? The Gemara there in Maseches Brochas says, "Kivan Shebarish Baruch Hu Beis Hakness and Losa Shem Asara." When Hakadosh Baruch Hu comes to a shul during the hours of day that are for davening, and there aren't 10 people in the shul, he gets angry. So as to preempt the wrath of the Almighty, the community hires 10 people to be available at prayer times, at davening times. So a place that doesn't have Asora Batlonim, Rabbi Shimon Levi tells us, Nidon Kikfar, it then takes on a Kfar status. What a Kfar status, what ramification that may have, so we could tie that into the issue of Megillah reading. They are the people that have alternative dates for the reading of Megillah. But for our purposes, a kfar category is something different than a krach category. And in order to assume a krach status, the place has to have these asora batlonim. The Gemara asks, "My komashmon, what do I need Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi for?" Tanina, we have a Tanaic source that indicates this. Eizehu ir gedola kol sheish bo asora batlonim. What's considered a large city if they have these 10 people that known as the asora batlonim? Pochos mikan hare ze kfar. Less than that, it's considered a kfar. The question then is, the information Rabbi Shimon Levi tells us essentially is contained in this Tanaic source. The Gemara answers, Krach itzderichalei. The the situation of krach needs to be told. The nature of a krach, Rashi says, the kol krach einu elo mokum shvokim. What characterizes a krach as opposed to an ir gedola, when you see the word krach, you know you're dealing with a commercial center. So the Rabbi Shubin Levi is telling us something special. Afalgav demikli le me almo, even though you may have in a krach asor batlonim. These are people that came from outside and are not doing anything constructive. They're just waiting around for something. That's what this expression, Mikli Le Me Almo, let's look at Rashi, the Mikli Me Almo, Anoshim Harbe, there are many people, V'yesh Harbe Men Betelin Mi Melocha, in a krach, which is a commercial center, you can have a situation of people that are simply not doing anything. And the reason for that is they come from outside the krach. They come to this commercial center. It could be that there are people waiting for some business deal to take place because it's a commercial center. But until the deal takes place, they are not doing anything. Because as Rashi says, Shein oisim melocha el b'mekoma. These are people that don't do melocha unless outside their own places. But as when they're in the krach, they're there on a temporary basis, on a transitory basis. Afilu hochi bo'inon kvuin. Even though you have people that are betelim mimalachton, but they're not kavua, they're not fixed there. And if you're going to rely on these people, sometimes they're not there. And that's what Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi tells me, that it's not sufficient that you simply have asora batlonim in order to be classified as an ir gedola, like the source says, but they have to be 10 kavua people. And that idea is conveyed or maybe hinted to in the fact that Rabbi Shulman Levi uses the example of krach, specifically krach, being an example of a place where there are often many people that are not engaged in malocha, but nevertheless they're not fixtures there. The Omar Rabbi Shulman Levi, krach shechorav ulebasoif yoshav nidoin kekrach. We can't translate that yet. The Gemara labors on that. My Chorav. As you see, we have a new marking as far as this sugya is concerned. You see the volcano form under our Mivneh heading in the outside margin. You see the volcano shape. Elamo. Elo. These are words that you will see enclosed in this trapezoid. They represent Shlavim Babur Halochazu, stages in trying to clarify what he is saying. So he said, Krach shechorav sof yoshim don krach. My chorav, what do you mean by that? Ilemo chorvu choy moisov. If chorav is a reference to the destruction of the walls, in this case we're referring to a krach in the context of a walled city, and he says that if chorav means the walls. So then, Yoshav in lo Yoshav loi. Yoshav in the context of walls would be the rebuilding of the walls. Are you telling me then that in order to be considered a krach, a place that had walls, only if the walls were rebuilt would it have a krach status, and if not rebuilt it would not have a krach status? That's not true. And by the way, when we talk about a krach status, we are not limiting ourselves to a Megillah reading issue, but we can talk about the Bote Orei Choma issue as well. And in fact, in that context, there are psukim. So the Gemara says, hey, even if the walls are not rebuilt, it still has a krach, a Bote Orei, an Orei Choma status. Well, Tanya, the source says, Rebbe Elazar ben Yossi Omer, Asher loy choymo. The word is lo is spelled lamed vov aleph, and the word is darshined as follows: afal pi she'ein loy achshav. Even if it does not have walls right now, v'hoya loy kodem lochein. since it had earlier, since originally it was a walled city with all the halachas that go along with that, like we saw before, walls put up first and then built, then houses built, it has a walled city status, even if that wall falls down and is not rebuilt. Elomai Chorav. What does the word Chorav mean in Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's comment? Shechorav me'asora batlonim, meaning the asora batlonim are no longer there. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is telling me that if you have a krach that once had asora batlonim, but they went their ways, they're no longer there, you don't have 10 established fixed batlonim in that city, it no longer has a krach or large city status. With that, we end our shiur for today.